Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
And the biggest problem we have in this business, the higher you go in it, is being envious of this job assignment. Or where this guy is on the totem pole, or what this guy is doing and what you're not doing, how much money this person's making and what you're not making. Just be thankful you're doing, because there are thousands that are lined up to do what you're doing. Be thankful. Don't be envious. Be thankful. And that is how I am. I am so thankful that I have been lucky enough to be in this business.
Welcome to the latest episode of this Just Getting Started About the Voices of the National Football League. Already, we've had Al Michaels and we've had Joe Buck of NBC Sports and Fox Sports respectively tell us about how their careers in broadcasting just got started, and also some neat stories along the way leading to a great piece of advice that they've received in their careers that maybe you can use in your life to take with you as you go about your journey here in these crazy, crazy times. My guest this week from right here, Cumulus Podcast Network, is home to Just Getting Started, also to Westwood One Radio and Westwood One Sports, the voice of Monday Night Football on Westwood One. Also, you hear him on CBS and the NBA on TNT, the great Kevin Harlan. Thrilled to have you here, Kevin Harlan. Thanks for doing this.
Rich, thank you so much. Great to be on. I'm over the moon in terms of working with you. So excited. And it's going to be a very fun season. The longest we've had too, which is going to be nice.
I know, right? We've got an extra week of games coming up this fall. There's going to be a week 18, which is going to be something wild to get to before another, extra wild card game per wild card day this coming January, middle of January. It's going to be a little bit weird to get used to, but I am particularly fired up to work with you and Kurt and who you call the games with, hosting the Monday Night Football broadcast from probably this position right here in my office. It is truly amazing, Kevin, that Monday Night Football is still in so many ways three words that carry with it a special message and a special feeling to it after all these years, a half century in, Kevin,
I'm so glad you said that. I feel the same way. When I first took an interest in radio, it was probably back about 1972, 73, 74. I was 12, 13 years old, and I remember listening to Monday Night Games. I believe at that time they were on Mutual Broadcasting, and I think Lindsey Nelson was one of the voices of Monday Night Football on radio. And then it went to a whole new level when Jack Buck and Hank Stram were broadcasting. And I remember driving when I was in high school for maybe games that I had done or covering a practice, but in high school, and thinking, would there ever be a way? Would there ever, in my wildest imagination, with an unlimited ceiling, thinking about this particular property, that I'd ever get a chance to do Monday Night Football? And so every time I put on that headset for Westwood One, regardless of stadium, I am living a dream. And I do say a small little prayer of thanks, the fact that I've been so incredibly lucky to get to do this. And I'll let you in on a secret of all the things I do, Rich, and you may feel this way after you join us this year. It's the most fun, the most fulfilling, the most challenging thing that I do. I get such incredible satisfaction being a part of that broadcast.
Well, I mean, there's so many different ways to go based on the answer you just gave. So I'm going to kind of take it one step at a time here. You mentioned Lindsey Nelson. For me, growing up in New York City, he was one of the broadcasters of the New York Mets games when I was a kid. And the thing that just leaps out to me about Lindsey Nelson is I never thought that jackets could look like that, the ones that he would wear. It looked like a horse blanket, you know, like I they were just these wild plaid jackets that he would wear. But he had a set of pipes, man. That guy had a set of pipes.
Yeah, from Tennessee. I think he was from Tennessee, may have even done the Volunteers. And of course, I think a lot of people outside of the New York, New Jersey, Connecticut area probably know him from the Notre Dame college football rewinds on Sunday morning that were syndicated all over the country. And then I watched him with CBS. And actually, I don't want to get too far ahead of myself. My dad was with the Green Bay Packers for 37 years, 20 years as the president and CEO. When I was in grade school and high school, I used to spot in the Lambeau Field press box for different broadcasters and networks, and got to work a couple times with Lindsey Nelson. And it was just the thrill of a lifetime.
Kidding. Now, again, that's another part of your answer, because you'd mentioned you were, you know, 12 and listening to the radio and hearing Lindsey Nelson, and you were inspired to get into radio. But also part of your upbringing that some might not know, you just mentioned you were exposed to the world of the NFL right from the get-go, with your dad being such an important part of the Packers organization and being at the forefront of the Packers organization is in terms of the lead member of membership, as they call it in the National Football League. What is your first football memory, Kevin Harlan?
I'll go back, Rich, even before that. My dad was with the baseball Cardinals as their media relations director during the time of the two World Series in 67 against the Red Sox and in 68 against Denny McClain and Mickey Lolich and the Detroit Tigers, Al Kaline, McAuliffe, all those with the Red Sox. But on that Cardinal team, and I used to go to spring training for 2 weeks every year that he was with the Cardinals, from 65 to 71, Bob Gibson, Lou Brock, Kurt Flood, Roger Maris, Julian Javier, Tim McCarver, Orlando Cepeda. I mean, like all these incredible baseball players at a brand new Busch Stadium in St. Louis. My dad had been with Al McGuire at Marquette as the sports information director and then went to the baseball Cardinals in 65. And so when I was a kid, we would go to church on Sunday mornings, drive after church down to Busch Stadium in St. Louis, have breakfast in the press box. And I remember distinctly walking in, here would come Jack Buck, and he would see me and my dad having breakfast in the press box. And I was like 6-7 years old. Here came Vin Scully and Bob Prince of the Pittsburgh Pirates, like these incredible voices. And then on those Sundays when I would watch home Cardinal games from the box seats or go out the left field or sneak into the clubhouse or wherever I was, it put me like behind the curtain. I got to see press boxes and fields and practices and all kinds of things. And when Dan Devine left the University of Missouri in 1971, he took my dad with him to run the Packer front office. So I was a ball boy from 1971 into the times I got in college in Green Bay. And then during the games, I'd go to the press box and spot, work on stats or do whatever. So I got to see everything. And it just put me so much further ahead because I knew the mechanics. I was lucky enough to be exposed to all these great writers, the way a press box operated, the way a broadcast booth moved, and that just fueled the fire even more.
That is amazing, Kevin. All right, again, I just want to rewind a little bit here because I did not know that part about your father's history. He was the SID for Al McGuire at Marquette.
He was.
You got a good story from your dad about that, about Al McGuire and Marquette?
I've got a pretty good one, broadcast related. When I was young, they've got a picture of me on a court with a ball, and it's shot from my back. And in the background, Al McGuire is having a practice with his Marquette Warrior basketball team. This is 1964, 63. I was 3-4 years old. Fast forward to CBS, where I work now and have for the last 24 years. Al McGuire and I worked on a game together at Michigan State. I brought that picture and we put it on the air. I was 3 or 4, and Al McGuire's conducting practice in the background. And Al McGuire, when my dad rejoined the Packers, came back to Wisconsin and joined the Packers, would come up on his Harley Davidson motorcycle from Milwaukee to attend one training camp practice every year. And, you know, I saw him all through high school. He'd come up once a year and by himself and take off the helmet. Here was Al McGuire, and he'd watch practice and get back on the Harley and drive back down to Milwaukee. He was a character and a wonderful guy. And just so I've kind of known him in three different ways. When I was a kid in 3 or 4, when I was in high school and he'd come to practice. And then one time I worked with him at CBS, which was a treat. And it was the second to last broadcast Al ever had. The last one was with Dick Enberg, the late Dick Enberg, and Billy Packer. CBS got them together the week after we did a game, and that was his final game at CBS. Final game on the air. Yes, yes.
Wow. I mean, talk about life working that way, Kevin. That is amazing. I did not know that. And that's part of the thing I love about this podcast series is just I love talking about announcers and broadcasting and you know, Enberg and obviously McGuire and Packer were one of the greatest trios to call any sporting event for any sport as well. And I had no idea that you were exposed to all of that at such a young age. So how did you get your first break? Because obviously, you know, your father and your life, you were afforded to get in on in spots that, you know, exposed you and stoked your interest in anything. How did you get your first gig? How did you eventually work into that?
Before you asked about my first football memory, and my first football memory was more of a voice, and the voice was John Facenda of NFL Films as he narrated Super Bowl I between the Packers and the Chiefs. And that kind of my interest in voice, in football, in sports, in broadcasting. When I was a ball boy, from time I was about 11 till I went to college, worked all the summers, and during my lunch break, I would run up to the press box in an empty Lambeau Field and go in the Packer Radio Network broadcast booth, shut the door, and do imaginary games on the field. And then in my room in Green Bay growing up, shut the door, turn on the TV, turn down the sound, and did countless games off of television. I went to a high school in Green Bay that unbelievably ran a radio station run by students. It was a 10-watt radio station, and tried out for the play-by-play job, which I had been practicing for the previous 3 or 4 years in my room by myself or in an empty Lambeau field up in the press box, and got the job when I was a sophomore and did play-by-play from 15 years on. Through high school, sophomore, junior, and senior year, football, basketball, hockey, soccer, and track meets. And then I got to the point where I was then freelancing and doing games on commercial radio stations in high school up and down the Fox River Valley, which included Oshkosh and Manitowoc and Sheboygan and all these little cities north of and south of Green Bay. And then went to college, and like so many of us, I really got my teeth into the business at that time with journalism classes and some practical experience with the student station and then commercial stations at the University of Kansas.
I was about to say, so you're a Jayhawk, right? Okay. All right. And who was coaching then and or playing there then?
Don Fambro was the football coach. You wouldn't know him, but the basketball coach with Ted Owens. But even more interesting than that, the guy that Gary Bender of CBS had recommended to my dad that I look at Kansas. I was going to go to Wisconsin and be in their journalism department. And Bob Johnson, the hockey coach of the Badgers, was recruiting a couple of our players on our high school team. was in our broadcast area as I was doing a hockey game and offered me a scholarship through the hockey program to go to Wisconsin to broadcast hockey for the Badgers. And of course, they had Olympians on that team eventually that went out and played in the 1980 Olympics. So, including his son, Mark Johnson. Gary Bender had told my dad, he said, you should go to Kansas, and there's a guy that broadcasts the Jayhawks, does their football and basketball by the name of Tom Hedrick. And I went down there, visited with Tom Hedrick, and he said, if you come to KU, I'll let you be with me on the Jayhawk Network on football and basketball during our pregame, halftime and postgame. You can do sideline and football on the network. I was sold. And ironically enough, Tom Hedrick was the first voice of Super Bowl I on CBS radio with Jack Drees, a Chicago broadcaster. And Tom did Super Bowl I and Super Bowl IV. And ironically enough, then I did Super Bowl 50. So you talked moments ago about things going full circle. I mean, how weird is that, that he would be kind of my mentor for those 4 years at Kansas. And then, like him, I would do the Super Bowl, and 50 years after he had done Super Bowl I.
And Super Bowl 55 now and counting.
Yes,
and,
yes.
You know, on Westwood I, it's, I love stuff like this, Kevin Harlan.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Check out our new NBA show, Beyond the Arc, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can find me, John Gonzalez, NBA insider Bill Reiter, and Ashley Nicole Moss, 5 days a week talking all things NBA. Whether you're looking for insightful discussions, upbeat commentary, breaking news, interviews, or coverage of all the biggest stories in the NBA, our new show is the place to be 5 days a week. Download and follow Beyond the Arc on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
What about the moment you knew, I guess you knew when you were a kid that this was right for you, but what about the moment where you realized it was work though, right? I mean, like that there is preparation that goes into it and travel and things like that. Was that in college? Did at any moment in time you wonder if this was something you wanted to continue to do, or it was always a labor of love from the get-go?
Always been a labor of love. I always tell people that I am living the life that I dreamt of living. And I always dreamt of doing games, especially on radio. Network radio was my first love, my true love right now in terms of the business and what I find the most challenging. We can talk about we can get in the weeds on that a little bit later on, because I know you like some of those mechanical things. But I think it became work once I met my wife. I had my first job out of college was in the NBA doing the Kansas City Kings on radio and television. I worked with Easy Ed McCauley on TV. But on radio, I worked by myself for 60 games, did 22 with him on a simulcast. And then the other games were just radio, and I did those by myself. But I got that job the day I graduated from Kansas. I was 21 when I got it and started when I was 22 in the NBA. I did 2 years with the Kings before they moved to Sacramento. And as they were trying to get me to go to Sacramento to continue as their voice, the Chiefs job opened up on radio. And I wanted to stay in Kansas City anyway. All my buddies were there. I was still single. I knew the city. I knew the area so well. Loved Kansas. And got the Chiefs job, hired by Lamar Hunt on a football football shaped table that was probably 10 yards long, and he was at one tip of the table, Lamar Hunt, and I was at the other, and Bob Springer, you may remember that name, the longtime PR director for the Chiefs, was sitting to my right, and the president of the team, Jack Stemmett. It was just the four of us in this room, and he offered me the job at 24 to do the Chiefs, and I did them for 9 years. But I met my wife.
I need more information, even though you told me the shape of the table and who's in there. So you get through, I imagine, the vetting process long enough where, like, you've got to meet Mr. Hunt, right? That's the way it went.
Len Dawson and I had to do the Missouri football spring game that previous Saturday at Arrowhead. So I had flown home from doing the Kings at the Spurs on TV, flew home Saturday morning, went right from the Kansas City airport to Arrowhead, and I walk in the booth, and here is Hall of Famer Len Dawson on a Saturday, an off day for him, and we're going to tape the first half of this game that then Lamar Hunt subsequently listened to and hired me off that spring football game for the Missouri Tigers. But when I met my wife and began to travel, that's when it became work. Sure. When I had to travel, that when I had to leave her, and we have a family, three girls and a boy, and that's when it became hard, and I felt like it became like work because of the traveling, being away from home.
Yeah, I mean, I you know, growing up, Kevin, my guy who in New York City who made me fall in love with the concept of doing this was Marv Albert. Growing up, listening to the Knicks and the Rangers on the radio and Marv calling it. And then, you know, when I was old enough to stay up, you know, snapped off the radio and then tuned into WNBC TV and watched Marv do the sports. And I'm like, so wait a minute. I'm like, so he's in Madison Square Garden calling the Knicks and the Rangers. And then he, you know, goes to work after that on TV. She calls the game. Then he does the highlights. I'm like, this is the greatest thing ever. And in the same way that you would call games, bless you, and, you know, and in an empty Lambeau Field, I was on Harold Street in Staten Island, New York, realizing I couldn't hit the curveball, so I might as well call the matches of my brother, you know, and that's what I would do. And I just fell, and I read Marv's book, something along the lines of, you know, sorry, but I have a game. I'd love to, but I've got a game. And that was the first time I did realize as a growing up, like, okay, it's a job, you know, and it is a dream job. But it is, you know, it's something, you know, and it's, that's why I just was wondering, because it's a dream way to grow up and get exposed to it and then work your ass off to get to the position where you were. But it's interesting. So then you met your wife and you had kids, and then, you know, sorry, I'd like to, but I have a game. I'm sure that happened.
It happened a lot. I think we've been married for 34 years. I think I've been around for like 3 anniversaries. I've missed a lot of birthdays, but what the kids would tell you, it's funny we're talking about this. NFL Films has been here for 2 straight days filming a story on our family. My daughter was with ESPN, has done a lot of sideline work, works with Westwood One on occasion doing sideline. My dad was with the Packers, and me and my NFL career with my 37th consecutive season doing the NFL play-by-play. But we were talking about, you know, I said, I always worried that I wasn't, if the remembrance of me when they were growing up was of a dad that was not there. And they said that was by the grace of God, they said this, that was the furthest thing from my mind. You were there every time we had a game, every time we were cheerleading. And there were some interesting, you know, flights back and forth. We'd do team meetings in the morning, and I'd fly back on Friday afternoon, watch them cheer or play on Friday night, and get back on a plane Saturday and go back to our city and do our stuff. And sometimes, you know, had been there for the important things. And we would just rearrange birthday. Instead of on a Tuesday, we'd celebrate it on a Wednesday. And if my wife and I had an anniversary on a Wednesday, we'd celebrate it maybe on a Thursday when I was home. But I'm off in the summer. I'm off right now. I'm at our, I'm off right now, except for some Packer preseason broadcasts, but I've been off since the middle of June when the NBA, my time in the NBA stops. So I think every time it's been harder, and every time I get on that plane, and you probably realize this too, just, you know, when you're away from home, you're away from home, and it just isn't as comfortable. We've all got a job to do, certainly. And that's part of life, but it doesn't make it any easier, and that becomes the hardest part. The prep, I never find the prep is hard. I not that I enjoy the process. Enberg always said to us in our CBS seminars, he would say, what I enjoy the most is digging into the books and writing down the notes. And I don't feel that way at all. I mean, I like
oh
it.
Oh, my.
I like. Oh, my. And by the way, Dick Enberg, I mean, and you know, you knew him. And what a just wonderful insight into the business and being a dad and being a husband and just a man in full. Right. I mean, he was a wine connoisseur. He traveled the world. He did Olympics. He did everything. But I enjoy my satisfaction comes after a game or after a play or a quarter when I said, boy, you know what? I think I did that. And the most anguish comes when I feel like, God, I wish I would have used this word or used that phrase or figured out a way how I could have called that better or laid out more or talked more or whatever. And you know, you always have, you get in a car after a game, heading to the airport, and you feel like there are 1,000 different things you would have done differently. But it's live TV or live radio, and right. And that's what makes it challenging. And the challenge is accepted by everybody that's there. And I love the challenge. And that's probably the most gratifying. But that becomes the work, just making sure that you're on top and staying focused and doing your job.
Our house is a mess. Come on in. I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.
Well, as we matriculate our way through this interview, to use the Hank Stram phrase here, 37 years ago, your first broadcast was what? The NFL. Give me your first game, your first assignment, your first partner in the booth. Walk me through it, Kevin.
Well, the first NFL play-by-play job, 1985, preseason game in Cincinnati with Len Dawson and an old-time broadcast of the late Bill Grigsby, who did the first year the Chiefs were in Kansas City in 1963. Mm-hmm. And that was my first NFL broadcast. Now, to backpedal a little bit, while I was in college doing all these other games on Sunday, I produced the Chiefs pregame show on KCMO Radio, a news talk station. They hired me when I was a sophomore in college. They gave me 3 hours of a pregame show to produce. So I was involved in the broadcast when I was about 19 years old and commuting into Kansas City from the Lawrence campus and doing all these different things for this three-hour pregame show. The best part of it, though, Rich, I mentioned John Facenda earlier on, and that was the voice that really got me thinking about broadcasting when I was 8, 9 years old. I wanted Facenda to do the open to the show, and I wrote a note to NFL Films, to John Facenda, like in 1980, 1979. And I said what I was doing, and I'd love him to, here's the copy, here's the address, please add your invoice, I would be most grateful if you do this. And about a week goes by, and I get at my fraternity in college at the University of Kansas, this NFL Films package, and in there are the reels from John Facenda. And he put his phone, he said, call me when you get this. I didn't even listen to him. I called him and said, hi, Mr. Facenda, this is him. And he said, let me ask you a question, Kevin. Would you mind if I revoiced one portion of this tape? And I said, sure, do whatever you want. Thank you, Kevin. I'm in the studio now, and I'll send this to you pronto. And so, sure enough, a couple days later, here comes this second reel that Facenda has recorded everything again, but he has added his own touches. And I'm listening to the tape then later that week for the first game, and I'm listening to the raw tape, and Facenda's on there saying, boys, let's try saying this, 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 and he records whatever he says and the way he wants it to be read, and he goes, now that's a horse that I can ride. And I could just see John Facenda in that voice saying that, and then I've got the tape somewhere in my home in Kansas City, And but that just again brought things full circle. That the great legendary voice who got the Pete Rozelle Award this year into the Hall of Fame in Canton, John Facenda's voice, and he recorded that for me when I was in college for our show in Kansas City.
Oh my gosh! Two stories I got to tell you based off of this. One, when Facenda was named the recipient of the Rozelle Award, which goes to somebody of a distinguished career in broadcasting. That's how a broadcaster goes in the Pro Football Hall of Fame, for those who may not know. I called up NFL Films and I poked around there. I spoke to Ken Rogers, who's one of the, you know, longtime producers there. And I'm like, you know, who there can give me the best Facenda story, you know? And he turned me on to Greg Cosell, who's been there for over 30 something years, the nephew of Howard, but who's been there forever and a day. And he told me that his tenure started just at the end of Facenda, and that he would write some copy and, you know, drive it over sometimes to Facenda's house to have him record it, or have him, he'd walk it into the studio with him. And when he got copy that he particularly liked, he would turn to Greg and he would say, "Now that's a horse I can ride."
Oh, wow. How about that? How about that?
What he said, according to Greg Cosell, when he got copy that he really liked, "Now that's a horse I can ride." So when you said that, I'm like, oh my God, that's what Greg Cosell just told me. It's a Facenda line. So you got the highest praise you could have gotten from John Facenda, which I'm thrilled to be able to even remotely tell you. I love that. The other one is the reason why I was, you know, calling around to NFL Films to ask for a name, is because obviously when he was alive, the person you'd reach out to is Steve Sable. Because, you know, I miss Steve immensely, who went into the Hall of Fame posthumously and a year late, because he was part of the 2020 centennial class, he just went in, that Steve was the walking encyclopedia. He was the walk. He was NFL Films incarnate. He was the Hall of Fame and NFL Films walking around. His brain was one of the most beautiful brains, and it's so remarkably heart-wrenching that it was his brain that eventually did him in. But the reason why I bring this up is I asked Facenda, I mean, I asked Sable in the first interview I ever conducted with him at the Super Bowl in Houston in 2004 calendar year, 2003 season, the first one we ever did for NFL Network. That was the Patriots beating Jake Delhomme, John Fox, and the Carolina Panthers. I asked him the person that NFL Films had to bleep out the most in the history of NFL Films, and his answer shocked me. He said Marv Levy.
Really?
And I'm like, the Ivy League coach of the Bills and obviously the Chiefs as well. And yes, that Marv cursed like a sailor. He said sometimes it was sounding like a truck backing up. We finished the interview on the air and I turned to him. I'm like, I can't believe it's Marv Levy you had to bleep out the most. And he says to me, "Well, I do have some outtakes of John Facenda that you'd really blow your mind." And I'm like, "What? Really? Like John Facenda would be the autumn wind is a, like F that." Like, I'm like, "Really?" Like he said, "Yes." And I'm like, "Is there any way I could hear one of them?" And he said, "Never. It will never see the light of day." So somewhere in Mount Laurel, New Jersey, that reel exists, Kevin.
Well, let me tie in two things you've talked about. When I was doing the Chiefs, CBS had just lost the rights to the NFC. Fox had gotten them. We're in Buffalo, AFC championship game, Joe Montana quarterbacking the Chiefs. I've just finished interviewing Marty Schottenheimer for our network coaches show. I'm walking down the tunnel, the ramp onto the field, walking across the field, and I see that I'm going to intersect with Carl Peterson, the president and general manager of the Chiefs, yes, and his best friend, Steve Sable. And as I'm approaching, Carl gets this big smile on his face. And I think, okay, I'm clearing my hello, you know, getting ready to say hello. And Carl goes, we were just talking about you. Steve was telling me a story about you. And I said, hello, I'm Kevin Hearn. He goes, I know who you are. You know, Steve, only a big smile on his face. He said, Fox just called me this week. They said, give me the top three play-by-play guys, in your opinion, doing radio in the NFL for local markets. And I gave him your name. And so every year that I sign a contract renewal with then Fox, and then for the last 24 years, CBS, while he was alive, I wrote a note to Steve Sable saying, the only reason I'm at this level is because of your kindness, your generosity, your thoughtfulness, and putting my name in front of somebody who could hire, and I'll forever be thankful. And then, you know, so obviously we've got a connection there. You mentioned Facenda. Before every game, I'm going to pull this up. Before every game I broadcast, because Facenda was my first real voice that captured my imagination, I play this before every Sunday game when I leave my hotel room for CBS, and every Monday night before I go to our field to do our Monday night games. And let me find this here real quick because
sure.
Here it is right here. I'm going to turn this as loud as I can so you can hear it.
The autumn wind is a pirate, blustering in from sea.
And I won't get too emotional here, but when I hear that, it puts me in the frame of mind of doing the NFL. How lucky, I know you feel this way, is really the voice now of the NFL. We all feel so lucky and privileged to be a part of this great thing. And when I think of my football weekends and one day with CBS and one day with Westwood One and one day working with Trent Green, then Kurt Warner, and now you. Those are the things that now for me at this stage in my career that I appreciate the most.
And just to, I guess, tie it all together, that reading of The Autumn Wind about the Raiders is a poem that Steve Sable wrote. He wrote that. So he wrote it, and Facenda, that was a horse that Facenda could ride, I'm sure, when he got that copy. And it is, you know, Sable, I get emotional talking about it. And I love sharing these stories, certainly with people who revere him, as you clearly do. I wrote a book in 2007 about the launch of NFL Network. I don't know what compelled me to write a book, but I did. And it was an undertaking, man, to say the least. And you could get it in, like, it's probably in one of these shelves behind me somewhere. You could get it for a cent somewhere.
I'm going to download it tonight on my Kindle.
Yeah, it's great, man. It's a little dated. It's about the weekend NFL draft and things like that. You know, it's dated. There's so much has changed. It's remarkable. It's changed between 2007 and now 2021. But there was a no-brainer for the person to write the foreword. It was Steve Sable. So I called Steve Sable up and I'm like, look, you know, I'd love for you. I'm sure you've got a lot of requests for this sort of stuff. But the NFL Network doesn't exist without you. You are the grand poobah of everything that is NFL media, which it wasn't even called at the time. But if you could find the time to write a forward, you know what, and any time in the next few weeks, please do it. And anybody's ever asked anybody to do anything in our industry, you know, it's sometimes they'll, you know, you got to ask again or right. Follow up.
Put it down at the very last moment and then send it in.
Kevin, within 3 days in the mail, I got the most remarkable forward that included, you know, references to Howdy Doody, you know, like typical Steve Sable. Like, I don't know how he could, why he would use that to talk about the advent of NFL Network or me. And it was everything I wanted and more. And it's something I will always cherish. And that family, you know, is a reason why NFL Network exists. And I love hearing that you think of him before you do every broadcast. It's so cool, man. I'm so glad that we're telling these stories to each other and for this audience right now. And I'm glad we got a chance to talk about Steve. It's basically what I'm saying.
He's had this wonderful place now in Canton with his dad. And how wonderful is that, that the Sable name is as prominent in that wing of Canton as, well, yeah, now Jack Buck and Joe Buck, because Joe just got in. So it's
Look, man, obviously you and your dad are seminal names for the NFL in terms of front office work and you know, being at the forefront of a franchise, and you being a voice of the NFL for locally and nationally now 37 years. So what was your first game for CBS where you earned your jacket, I guess, your sport coat?
You know what? I remember my first game for Fox, my first network game for Fox.
Okay. So Fox, you were on Fox before CBS?
I was for 4 years. Okay. In fact, they hired, okay, you know, they hired Summerall and they hired Stockton. And then they probably had no more money left to spend. So, they hired four other guys. They hired me, Joe, yeah, Buck, Kenny Albert, and Tom Brenneman. And we were their six play-by-play guys. And my first and four-year partner, my first partner, only partner, four-year partner was Jerry Glanville. And our first game was at Lambeau Field in Green Bay with the Vikings playing the Packers. And they come on with James Brown, who at that time was with Fox. And he said, "Welcome to a new dawn of NFL broadcasting on Fox Sports." And he was there with Jimmy and Terry and Howie and everybody else. And they're a minute or two into their pregame show, first time they broadcast the NFL, and their first stop on the road was in Green Bay because Sterling Sharp was holding out of practice and games leading up to the opener because he didn't like his contract. And that was the big story opening weekend, 1994. And they came to me at Lambeau, then they widened the shot to me and Jerry. We gave him the report. We're not 5 minutes as a network into the NFL, and I send it back to Los Angeles. Another fun moment, my brother Brian was with the Chicago Bears for 16 years. He was there with Ditka and McMahon and the Fridge, Walter. No kidding. Yes, he was the PR director with Kenny Valdeseri, and he was there for 16 years in Chicago. And we would do this whip around on Fox where Summerall would send it to so-and-so and Buck would send it to Brenneman and Brenneman would send it to Dick Stockton and Stockton, you know, so we would do this whip around to all the games they were going to broadcast in that early window. So Pat Summerall is giving his report. This may have been like week two. And I'm Pat Summerall in San Francisco. Now let's go to Brian Harlan at Soldier Field in Chicago. He was throwing it to my, he got mixed up with my brother and me and felt horribly and called me that night and he felt horrible. I said, "Please, just hearing you say our last name is enough." And I use Pat Summerall's spotting boards to this day. When I was a couple years at Fox, we were talking about preparation. And Summerall said, "What do your boards look like?" And I said, "Well, I've got them kind of positionally depicted. I've got the offensive line. I've got the receivers. I got a tight end. I got the backs. And I got the quarterback." He goes, "Let me bring my boards next week and I'll show you." And he brought his boards and I have used them ever since because he does them numerically. And in this day and age, Rich, as you know, with players now wearing number 11 and number 6, and they're playing defensive line in the NFL, or linemen going back in coverage, the sub packages, they're all over the place. So numerically has been a gift from Pat Summerall that I use to this day with my spotting boards.
Well, in this year, as you know, players are
exactly
wear all sorts of numbers. That's going to come in really handy this year.
It is. And I just finished doing a game. My first preseason game at the Packer Television Network, and we got guys wearing single digits playing linebacker, playing defensive line. And it's running backs now with the single digit, which you never saw. Now you do, right. And now you know that just because you see a number 49 does not mean a guy, you know, should be in this place. Now he could be who knows where, and or number 8 or number 11. So it's weird. It's going to take some it's going to be tough on play-by-play guys, I know.
How about that, Kevin? So you listen to Facenda before a broadcast. You look down, you see Summerall's boards. I mean, my gosh, you're a walking museum. You're a walking broadcasting museum.
Well,
you're doing this thing.
I know you're guided by those kinds of people, that the voices in your head are the people that, whether it's Musburger, you know, the greats that have hosted, that have been the hosts of these magnificent Sundays in pro football. And those are the voices I hear in my head. I wish I sounded more like them. I don't, but I do hear those voices. And I'm sure you do too. Like we're all guided by people like you were talking about, Lindsay and us. We're all following that compass that those earlier broadcasters set for us to follow. And I do every Sunday and Monday night for sure.
Well, Kevin, let's wrap it up with the question I ask everybody on this series. And that is the best piece of advice and from whom that you've received in your broadcasting career. What's the best words of wisdom you've received? Who told it to you? And
I think I've got a pretty good one. When I was doing the Kings and I was 22 doing the NBA, I was doing a game in Landover, Maryland with the Kansas City Kings against the Washington Bullets. Before going to that game, when I was in college, I listened to Larry King do overnight on Mutual Broadcasting. I thought he was the best interviewer I had heard. I loved his voice. He was an economy of words, an efficient, I just idolized Larry King. And I had called the offices of Mutual in Crystal City, Virginia. And I said, here's who I am. Here's what I've done. Here's what I've listened to growing up. Would you mind after I do this game, if I drove to Crystal City from Landover to watch Larry King do his overnight show? And they said, sure. So I drive in after the game from Landover in a rental car, get to Crystal City. They let me in. I go to and King's show has already started. And I'm sitting in a booth where I can see him through the glass. And that night, his interviewee was John McCain, talking about being a prisoner of war. So John McCain and Larry King are in there talking for a couple hours. They're taking calls. John McCain leaves. We now get into the last hour of his show between 4 a.m. and 5 a.m., but I cannot take my eyes off of Larry King. And he comes into the booth during a commercial break, and he says, hi. They said we had I'll think of it here in a second. We said we had a young broadcaster in here, and I'll think of the term he used. I forget what it was. And he goes, how are you? And I knew I had just a limited time. So I said, do you have any advice for a young broadcaster who's just starting? And he said, the advice I would tell you is always please yourself. He says, you're going to have different people in your ear. You're going to have producers. You're going to have directors. You're going to have bosses and program directors and everybody telling you how you should do it and what you should say and how you should sound and everything else. He said, but the advice I would give any young fireballer, I think is what he maybe, was that what it was? What I would recommend is always please yourself. Because if you always please yourself, you'll stay true to yourself. And in this business, as you'll find, the longer you're in it, you need to stay true to yourself. Believe what you believe in. Study the others. Do all the things you've got to do to be good. There's a roadmap out there. And I'm saying, you know, follow that. But at the end of the day, you've got to please yourself. So when I talk to college kids, I tell them that. I say, be present. I said, in this business, if you're wishing you were this person or envious of that person or trying to be like him or trying to be like whatever, I said, you're not being yourself and you're not doing the job in front of you. If you're looking over here and over here or up there or over there, you're not looking right in front of you. And the biggest problem we have in this business, the higher you go in it, is being envious of this job assignment. Or where this guy is on the totem pole, or what this guy is doing and what you're not doing, how much money this person's making and what you're not making. Just be thankful you're doing, because there are thousands that are lined up to do what you're doing. Be thankful. Don't be envious. Be thankful. And that is how I am. I am so thankful that I have been lucky enough to be in this business, and to literally this point, and I'm talking with someone who I've admired forever. Have followed your career. I'm going to be your teammate. And so this is why I am thankful that I'm in this business.
Well, and right back at you. And clearly you take Larry King's advice to heart, even to this day, as I could hear it, as you call NFL games and you call big moments in games with the same enjoyment as you do streakers on the field, Kevin. So you're clearly...
Rich, I just hope it's not you. What I would love to do is call your 40 time at the combine for St. Yes! Jude. That's what I want to do. And I, by the way,
next year, Kevin.
You know what? Let's do it. Let's get that on. And I'll get people to and I'll think of weird stuff to say, and I'll do something for NFL Network, and we'll get that on, because that cause, if there is a cause to believe in,
thank you.
That is a cause to believe in.
Well, I just hope that your call is less than 6 seconds this time around. I'll just...
Oh, there'll be a preamble. There'll be the call, and then there'll be the afterword, and that will be the fun part to call. Huffing and puffing and striding. Look at him go! Oh, galloping his way. We could have so much fun with that. Please let me do that. Don't ask anybody else.
No, don't worry. It's in. You're locked in. It's done. The job's yours, Kevin. That's a horse I can ride.
That is a horse.
This is great, Kevin. Thank you for being on Just Getting Started. And this whole season on Westwood One, a total blast. Look forward to
it. Can't wait. Thank you so much. An honor to be with you. My privilege to be joining you on this podcast. Thank you, Rich.
Kevin Harlan here on Just Getting Started. What a fun episode with Kevin Harlan. I mean, what a lush, lush story. From the way he grew up and what his father did for a living and how he got exposed to that and then making the most of his opportunities. Again, I think that's what we're beginning to see here is the opportunities that have been afforded to our guests. You know, some of them due to their families, Joe Buck from Fox and now Kevin Harlan. But it's what you do with them. You know, that only take you so far. And I just also love the piece of advice that Kevin Harlan got from Larry King. And it may come across, certainly in an industry where, you know, everybody thinks the talking head, it's all about them and they have an ego, and we all have egos. I mean, we don't like to be told that we suck, clearly, and that's what you get on Twitter. By the way, my handle is @RichEyes, and if you want to tell me I suck, I'll just ignore it. But please, give me a follow. That it sounds egotistical that do what interests you. That's what Larry King says. Talk about the stuff that interests you. And that is a piece of advice that I totally understand. Certainly since I do a show with my own name on it. And it takes a serious set of cojones. A little bit of the old, Nicki Minaj cousin's friend to follow that advice. Because there's always a self-doubt. Like, just because it interests me, is it going to interest a whole bunch of other people? It's called broadcasting for a reason. Broad is the root of broadcasting. It's not narrowcasting. And that's what we're seeing so much these days, is there's so much narrowcasting. That's the way you get your news. You get this, you get that. But trying to reach the largest bunch of people to bring them into your tent, to me, it takes a set of, you know what, to say, I'm just going to talk about what interests me and hope that it interests other people. That is one way to look at it. The other way I look at it as well, that it takes a certain confidence level that you are going to talk about just the stuff you want to talk about, stuff that interests you. If it makes you happy, if it makes you laugh, you should do it. You know, obviously, again, broadcasting, you're not just broadcasting for yourself and your own jollies, as I did to pretty much start my ESPN SportsCenter career when everything was a joke and it really wasn't all that good. So you could be dangerous if that's your only mantra or the only way you look at it. But the reason why Larry King said what he said, I believe, is not just to say the stuff that interests you because you believe in yourself and that what you like, you're betting on everybody else is going to like too. But what that means is talk about what you like, what makes you happy, what makes you laugh, what makes you interested is another way of saying be genuine. And the most successful people I've met in this business in now 25 years of sports broadcasting or being in the voice of the NFL world is being genuine is a sign of tremendous success. Only the most successful people have that ability. And it is so important to be genuine because every successful person I've met in this business on the air is who they are off the air. Same person. Stuart Scott, the guy that you saw on the air, sure, was he saying these lines, catchphrases, and citing lyrics and all of that stuff. Well, that's what he was doing off the air. the silly stuff he was doing on the air, same guy off the air, same person. Lights on, lights off. Chris Berman, same way. Same exact way. Dan Patrick, Keith Olbermann, Craig Kilborn, you know, Robin Roberts and Charlie Stern. I mean, on and on and on. Linda Cohn, same person. On and off the air. You know, will they have an anchor voice or something? A little bit sometimes when you're doing, you know, just trying to enunciate. Same thing. Michael Irvin, Deion Sanders. Over and over again. I keep telling you. So when Larry King says, talk about the stuff that you like, that interests you, that's you being genuine. You're just saying, hey, this is what I believe. And let the chips fall where they may. You know? And that's the my mantra going about my job every day on the Rich Eisen show. Again, it's fun to refer to a name with my own name in it, which sounds egotistical, but that's the name of it, you know? Is that I'm going to talk about the stuff that interests me. Talk about my life best I can, about my wife who sits in for me. My wife, Susie, fills in, and I love that. Talk about my kids, talk about movies, talk about TV shows, and then my opinions about the NFL and sports in general. And let the chips fall where they may. I'm being genuine, literally, saying stuff on the air that I would say off the air. And I think that's what Larry King was telling Kevin Harlan, that there's two ways of looking at it. Like I said, one is you got to have the confidence and belief in self to talk about stuff that you think the rest of the world likes. And in that regard, in the NFL Network, on the NFL Network, on the air, when I'm hosting a draft or a combine or game day morning on a Sunday this fall, as I do every Sunday from 9 a.m. Eastern to kickoff of the 1 o'clock games on the Eastern time zone, that I'll always ask the questions that I think fans have either called into my show to ask me or I think fans are most interested in. Try to put myself in the fans' shoes. So that's my way of broadcasting, but I'm also interested in the answer to the question myself because I consider myself a fan. And then the other part of looking at it again is to, you know, make sure you're genuine. Literally asking questions that I'm concerned about myself. And also reacting to the guys on the air in the same way that I would in a meeting or, you know, in an airport terminal waiting for the same flight to take us somewhere pre-pandemic. So, great piece of advice right there from Larry King to Kevin Harlan. That's not a name I was expecting during this series of podcasts. Although Larry used to be a voice of the NFL. He worked on the Miami Dolphins broadcast way back in the day. That'll wrap it up for this. I want to thank Kevin Harlan and for you for downloading this. You should get the other podcast shows that are previous to this with Al Michaels and Joe Buck. Don't miss that.